The Ticket.
D-E-A-T-H. What does that spell? Death, 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 death.
Well, it is, in fact, trifecta time. Time for us to remember those who have recently passed away by taking a moment to consider how much they mattered, Corby, and whether they gain a room in a three-bedroom apartment in the sky.
Well, as everyone knows, we have had a rash of death like we have not seen in a long, long time. Sometimes you'll go a couple of weeks, maybe even a month, without someone passing away that you didn't know their name, and suddenly you're hit with about four or five.
People be dying.
That all come within 48 hours, and joining us is the tiebreaker himself, Donovan Lewis.
Hello, Hardline.
Hey, Donnie.
He is the tiebreaker.
So I'm very interested to see what you guys think of this fella, because, you know, as someone who did grow up in Texas and in the 70s, I was introduced to this man by my dad, who was a big fan of, at the time, outlaw country. And then you could not stay away from him in the 70s from a pop culture standpoint, in the world of music or the world of film. And even though we, Donovan, Bob, and Dave, even though we're all about the same age, I'm 2 years older essentially than each one of you, two or three, one and a half with Donovan. I feel like that you guys, especially Dave and Bob, you kind of ignored the 70s from a music and pop culture standpoint.
Yeah, I didn't have older siblings, and my parents were much older. They weren't into rock and roll.
And my parents...
And so I just wasn't exposed to music.
Or film.
Yeah.
Nothing.
My parents thought rock music was of the devil.
I know.
And so were TVs.
And you weren't going to see... Yeah, you weren't going to see any movies. It's almost like you guys had your collective eyes opened in like 1984.
That's
kind of
right.
When your lives started musically and... Movie wise, right?
Yeah, probably 83.
Okay.
84, yeah.
I think that's fair.
I became obsessed with a lot of things from the 70s and the 60s as well as a pretty small kid, whether I was exposed to it by my parents or friends' older brothers or whatever it was. And certainly Kris Kristofferson was a monster at the time. Kris Kristofferson was born in South Texas in 1936 and ended up moving out to California, where he was in Sports Illustrated in the Faces in the Crowd. Don't know if you guys remember that bit that SI did.
I love that bit.
As he was one of the most promising boxers of the time.
Wow.
It wasn't a swimsuit issue?
It was not the swimsuit issue, no. So he graduated with honors with a degree in literature from Pomona College in California. He was smart enough, like genius smart enough, to write a couple of short stories that the Atlantic Monthly published. They were so good, he was awarded a Rhodes Scholarship to study English literature at Oxford. Very, very bright. And away he went, and he graduated from Merton College in Oxford in 1960. Then he went into the Army in the early 60s, and, excuse me, he was in the Army for about 5 years, stationed in Germany, and they asked him if he wanted to go to West Point to teach English, which was a huge honor at the time, and his parents were like, oh my God, you've had free everything up until this point, and now the military basically wants to pay you to teach at this prestigious school. To which he says, I'd love to do that, but I'm moving to Nashville to write songs. And his parents freaked out, as any parent would at the time. And he moved to Nashville not knowing anybody. And once he got to Nashville, he was doing anything and everything just to be seen and known. And he ended up working as a janitor at Columbia Records. And at the time at Columbia, Johnny Cash was there and Bob Dylan was there. And so he would be sweeping the floors, lurking as Bob Dylan is recording some of his most famous stuff back in the day, and Johnny Cash as well. And he's like, how do I get these guys? How do they notice me? Well, he came up with a half-cocked idea because he was still in the National Guard at the time. That's how he was making money on the side. He took his helicopter, which he flew every weekend or every third weekend or whatever, took his helicopter, landed it in Johnny Cash's front yard.
Okay.
Had a demo tape, and according to Johnny Cash, here comes this swashbuckler exiting a military helicopter with a beer in one hand and a demo tape in the other, and he hands it to me, and the rest is history. Well, Johnny Cash had a funky memory. It wasn't all that. He ended up handing the cassette to a gardener, and but anyway, he kind of became...
What did he do with the beer?
He didn't have a beer either. But
I like the made-up story better.
It's way better.
Yeah, me
course.
Too.
It's legendary. But he started to become known. He started to become this songwriter. And Johnny Cash became good friends with him in the late 60s and encouraged him, look, your songs are so good, we're going to get you to play. And you guys are familiar with the Newport Folk Festival in Rhode Island. They still have it to this day. It's a huge deal. Johnny Cash was playing that. He and June Carter Cash, his wife, dragged Kris Kristofferson out on stage and said, you're going to know this guy within a couple of years. And he's shaking, doesn't want to play. And they're like, play now. And away he went, and he was so good at the Newport Folk Festival, got written up in the New York Times the next morning, and really, he took off from there. He had hit after hit after hit after hit, all recorded by other people, because everybody wanted a piece of his music. And the one that's most famous is Me and Bobby McGee from Janis Joplin. That became a number one hit in the early 70s. He was dating her at the time, and she was like, oh my God, you have this treasure trove of songs. And then it just became a who's who, whether it was Johnny Cash, whether it was Al Green, everybody wanted a piece of Kris Kristofferson's music. And he won Grammy after Grammy. He had number one hit after number one hit on the country charts and on the blues charts and on the pop charts.
As a songwriter.
As a songwriter, yes.
Okay.
Now he was recording his own stuff at the same time too. And playing it. But he became known as this guy that could write, you know, just the best song that you would ever want, no matter what the genre was. Well, then, in the early 70s, he was so big that these famous directors were like, dude, you are such a natural when we see you up on stage. You have such command of an audience. We want to put you in movies. And Gene Hackman was the one that kind of broke him out, was like, he was starring in this movie called Cisco Pike. And Hackman's like, I want that guy. And he had never acted before in his life. And he debuts in 1972. Then the great Sam Peckinpah got him to be in Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid in 1973, a super famous movie in which, oddly enough, Bob Dylan did the score for it. And he was instrumental in getting Dylan to do that. Then he was in Convoy, the movie about big rigs going down the highways. Then he was in Semi-Tough, and Semi-Tough was kind of that cowboy. Did you guys not see Semi-Tough? Am I speaking to an audience of none?
I don't believe I ever saw it.
It's an NFL movie that,
yeah,
you know, kind of loosely based on the Cowboys at the time.
I'd be willing to see it, but I have not seen it.
Yeah, well, he was the star of that. And he was in there with Burt Reynolds. Martin Scorsese said, I got to have this guy in my movies. And in 1974, he cast him in Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore. And then Barbara Streisand said she got cast to be in A Star Is Born. And she says, I want him. And Kris Kristofferson was cast as the lead. Bradley Cooper, of course, redid this movie with Lady Gaga here in the last 5 years. Well, at the time, A Star Is Born was about as big a movie as there was. Streisand, Kris Kristofferson, about a, you know, pilled up alcoholic singer from the 70s that was, you know, fell hopelessly in love with this woman and ended up committing suicide at the end. And It just kind of went on and on. Then he was part of the outlaw country scene. He joined up with Willie Nelson and Waylon Jennings and Johnny Cash to be in the Highwaymen. And it just, again, everything he touched turned to gold. He was huge. He was such a rugged, good-looking, folksy, Texan, everyman superstar. Yet, at the same time...
Very attractive.
I just said that.
I know.
Yeah, he was also this incredibly sensitive poet and songwriter. He had everything going for him at the time and was just a megastar. For the more recent audience, he starred in Blade with Wesley Snipes in every single one of the Blade movies. Is that how you knew him, Ham?
Yes.
Yeah. And again, a whole new audience found him there. And yeah, I mean, like, the guy is just, was just a legend. Not only a Texas legend, not only a musical legend, not only a film legend, not only a poetry legend. He was a legend, a military icon. He did it all and spoke his mind. You know, for me as a kid, he was one of those guys that I looked up to as a little kid. Very, very aware of him. When I got to interview him about a dozen years ago, I was shaking. I was so nervous talking to Kris Kristofferson. So it's one of the true joys of being able to work in this business was running into Kris Kristofferson. Donovan, I'm wondering if you had any concept of him.
Knew the name and knew the face. Wasn't familiar with the music, of course, but then there are a couple of movies you saw, and just looking over his resume, and I knew the Al Green tune that he wrote, and yeah. Saw him in Blade. So yeah, I was aware of him. Not as much as you, but I was.
Huge activist too. You know, when it came to the plight of whether it was the African American, whether it was the women's movement of this, that guy was all over it and would say anything and everything to get his point across. He was a treasure, man. He was a true, true treasure. Passed away at the age of 88. A very, very, very well-lived life. And in the 70s, there are people, icons of the 70s and 80s that people instantly think of. If you don't include Kris Kristofferson in that list of absolute icons, crossover icons that struck it gold in everything that they touch, then you're doing yourself a disservice. He was beyond huge. All right. Lando?
Yeah, I'll vote him in.
A little too casual. DJ?
Yeah, in.
Put him in.
Were you guys familiar with him at all?
Yeah, I definitely knew who he was.
Lando?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's a popular name.
All right.
I'm curious where Dave is on this.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't until later in life that I understood his contribution in music, but yeah. I knew him as an actor. And so definitely in.
Would you have put him in? Like, not knowing...
I can't think of anybody we've ever done that I knew less about and that...
Who's done more?
But that everyone else acted like their life just took a left turn. Like, Troy was like, dude, you know, Chris...
Yeah.
You know, so I certainly realize there's things in this world I don't know anything about, and Kris Kristofferson
contributed,
and I know the name, but
the Titanic movement that he was a part of... You know, whether it was the late 60s, early 70s, and music, film, all that, like, until I just said that, were you aware that he did everything and that every director wanted him and every actor wanted
him? You could have asked me 1 week ago to write on a piece of paper everything I know about him, and you would still have a piece of paper.
Yeah, we have a cut from Bob from, 10 years ago who thought Kris Kristofferson was Lee Greenwood and sang Proud to Be an American. I don't get it how the 70s just didn't exist to you.
Well, it existed.
Kristofferson is rolling over in his grave at that confusion by Bob.
It's an admitted blind spot. And
is he in the ground yet?
Let's put
Maybe he's just rolling around in the drawer.
yeah, he is.
Put him in.
All right, let's put him in. Donovan, hang on the line because Pete Rose is next. Holy effing hellballs. A lot of people are dead next. But with this massive, massive death influx that we've had, especially in the sports world, with Dikembe Mutombo and now the great Pete Rose.
Oh, I thought we were trying to get the Houston Astros into a trifecta.
Out.
Way out.
I'm sorry.
Ooh. It's a happy day for everyone who's not in Houston.
Well, now they're out. Now you don't have anybody to root against.
Oh, we'll figure something out, but
the Yankees are still in.
Very, yeah, that's true. Very few teams can call the Detroit Tigers daddy.
The Tigers. The run continues. All right, Donovan is still with us. The great Pete Rose checked out
in
at the age of 83 years old. Now, hold on.
How hard
we don't
is
know.
This?
Well, we don't know. He's not in the Hall of Fame.
That's true. We might hold him out for character issues.
I mean, why not? Pete Rose, who I'm assuming just like you guys, when I was growing up, Pete Rose kind of defined the entire sport of baseball. They were winning World Series with the Big Red Machine. He was already, at the time, known as the Hit King. There was talk in 1976 about how long it would take before Pete Rose broke the all-time hit record. And he embodied everything that my dad and his peer group loved about sports. And it would be, you'd be watching a Reds game, Pete Rose would draw a walk. And what does Pete Rose do? A full sprint to first base. And that is, son, you see that? He didn't even like to walk. He's always hustling. That's why they call him Charlie Hustle.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, wow, okay. And you would see that. You talk about the way kids mimic their sports heroes of the time.
So did he start the white dude lunch pail hustle?
No, because he was a great athlete.
No, I know. But did that kind of, stereotype begin with him?
I mean, it was dumb, him sprinting to first base.
He plays the game the right way.
Right.
And all of our dads are going, look at that guy. Yeah, son of a gun. But you would see
kids. You can set your watch to that haircut.
You would see kids sprint to first base after they drew a walk. And I'm like, okay, come on.
Fire that bat to the on-deck circle and sprint down.
Yeah. Yes, because of Pete Rose.
Just relax, Pete.
People would mimic his stance. You know, he had that really iconic crouch. And his swing was so incredibly simple. And not knowing anything about the man Pete Rose, the player Pete Rose was just beyond legendary. I had to have his first baseman's mitt, being a fellow lefty first baseman, which to this day still sits in my closet. He was it. I couldn't believe it when he left Cincinnati, because why would anybody ever leave that place, you know? But, you know, Pete Rose just, he was as big or bigger than the game itself. At a time when baseball was still at the very top of the pecking order of sports. And was there a name that you guys can think of growing up that was bigger than Pete Rose when you were little kids?
Not for me, but I certainly know for a lot of people, Hank Aaron and Willie Mays would probably at least be in the conversation, right?
But they were done by the time, are almost done by the time we became sports conscious.
Sure.
Pete was still cooking.
Yeah. In the 70s, it would be Reggie Jackson would be the only comp, probably.
Yep. Reggie would be it.
Now, did your dad say the same thing about Pete Rose as they did Reggie Jackson?
Man.
He played the game the right way.
I'd love to hear any opinion my dad's ever had on Pete Rose, because I don't think I've ever heard one, but the thing about Pete Rose, and it's interesting, of course, because we all know the spike through me head conversation, but it is amazing that a 23-year career can kind of be ignored this week because of how it ended. And I guess I just don't operate that way, and I get the conversation, I get the argument, but for 23 years, he was one of the sport's biggest superstars.
He was sports.
He did something that you can't do, but to log on to MLB.com this week and did not see one mention of Pete Rose. To have playoff games, four of them every day, and there's no moment of silence. There's no tribute at all. And I realize he disgraced himself, and he's to blame for all of that. But, boy, is that weird, because if Willie Mays died this week, every game would start with a solemn, you know, situation. And I understand why that would be as well. But it's wild how we've sort of erased or tried to erase Pete Rose from the public's memory, and I just.
But he kind of had no remorse.
Like, he's a bad guy.
He never was like hat in hand, like I'm sorry,
no.
guys.
He's a bad guy.
He's horrible.
He's a stubborn dude, and all that. He's also, without question, one of the greatest baseball players who's ever lived.
Yeah.
And so for that.
And again, like
I'm, you know, like
the records that he holds as far as hits and games played. And I mean, like, they're kind of untouchable.
I mean, I think Barry Bonds should be in the Hall of Fame.
Ooh.
What do you think of that? I do.
No, he didn't.
I think O.J. Simpson should be in the Hall of Fame. Oh, double murder. So
he is in the Hall of Fame, right?
Yes.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, but there are people that want him taken out, is what I'm saying.
They want to cut his head off. Donovan.
That would be great if they just left the neck
down. Yeah, just the stump
the
of his bust.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
And you know who OJ, because Dave, I know you've been to the Hall of Fame before, and the craziest part about seeing OJ's bust in the Hall of Fame is who it's right above.
Oh,
Roger Staubach.
Oh, that's right.
They were in the same class. It's really, really weird.
It is weird.
But yeah, Pete, the last 40 years of Pete Rose's life, let's say from 85, 86, he set the all-time hits record in 85, and it wasn't too long after that that the controversy started that he was not only gambling, but he was gambling on his team. And he said that he only gambled on them to win. He never bet on them to lose, which who knows if that's true, but he was such... You talk about a guy.
Well, I would say we probably know it's true because they were trying tirelessly to find proof of that. They had no trouble finding his gambling proof.
Right.
They could not find, you know, so I don't know if that changes anything for anybody.
I doubt a guy like that would ever bet against himself.
That's right.
No.
Unless he was so far in the weeds, you know, down to, you know, whatever bookie there was. But he was such a slime ball of a human. Like, really one of the true pieces of garbage to ever walk the earth. And it's not just the gambling part of it. Pete Rose was scum. And I'm so glad as a kid I wasn't aware of that. Yeah, to his family. I'm so glad I wasn't aware of that as a kid because, you know, as kids, especially kids growing up then, we were insulated from all the bad doings that were going on from a sports standpoint. There was no internet. There were no stories talking about these guys and being, you know, knowing what sorry people they were. We just didn't know. We were happily blind to it all. But man, when it all came out, you know, whether it was him, whether it was OJ, like you were saying yesterday, Bob, whether it was the struggles of Mickey Mantle, it was like, what?
Yeah.
Oh, it kind of hit hard.
A lot of athletes.
Now we're desensitized to it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, well, part of it is probably a arrested development where you're so good at sports that nobody ever holds you accountable for behavior. And so when you leave the sports world, you continue to think rules don't apply to you.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, he's in. Lando?
Yes, Pete Rose, the player, is in.
Yeah. Can't even put him in the hole, DJ.
I'll say no.
Listen to him.
I'll say yes.
All right. We're going to put him in.
I was going to vote for the hole. Is that not an option?
I think he's going to stay out of the hole. As horrible of a person as he is.
You got to save that.
He may like it down there.
You got to save that for like Pol Pot, probably. Yeah.
Hey, can I say something, though?
Yeah.
Please, Donovan.
You know me and gambling.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't bother me a bit, and I don't care. I have never, ever in my life liked Pete Rose. The player, the whatever, just never have. It's never been the epitome of baseball for me. That Charlie Hustle stuff was crap. Him bowling over the catcher in the All-Star
horrible,
game.
Dude. That was so
just
classless.
Terrible.
Such
he
trash.
It has nothing to do with what he did after baseball or whatever. I never liked him on the diamond. So I'm going to officially say no.
Okay.
Because I never, ever liked him.
Yeah, as you can.
Yeah, you can. It's not really the question, though, if you like him. The question is, does he belong in a trifecta? Absolutely.
So four votes, yes. Well,
two votes no and one vote for the hole.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He'll bring all the cocaine for the apartment. Who is he in there with?
That would be Chris Christopherson and
Mercury Morris.
Oh my God. Oh, yeah, that's a perfect roommate for Mercury Morris. They'll have fun.
Yeah, if one's not holding, the other one will be.
Yeah. Chris Christopherson is going to have a lot of songs to write.